Good afternoon, Your Honors. Colin Campbell for American Family. Our position in this appeal stems from a simple premise, and that is that American Family had the legal right to appeal the trial court's dismissal of its legal defenses, including its defense that Rooftop Roofing did not have standing to have brought the lawsuit, as well as its legal defense that Rooftop Roofing's lawsuit was untimely. I think this premise remains unchallenged. Certainly the trial court, in its various rulings, accepted, or at least assumed for the purposes of its rulings, that American Family did indeed have the right to appeal its the court's dismissal of those defenses. And Rooftop Roofing, in its extensive briefing, has never really touched on that issue. So,
Mr. Campbell, sorry to interrupt. I have a real fundamental question I'd actually like both of you to answer. Is this a question of law or a question of fact?
Well, with regard
to... In other words, whether a delay is reasonable.
I think threshold, it can be a question of law. And I think in this particular case, it is a question of law. I think as long as there is a viable argument that American Family had in support of its defenses, the fact that it is a viable argument that there's a reasonable basis in the fact and law for American Family to have pursued its position, I think that makes it reasonable as a matter of law. And the standing issue at the time that these defenses were raised, the question of whether Rooftop Roofing as a third party to the contract had standing to pursue that claim was essentially a matter of first impression under Colorado law, and as was reflected in the briefing at the trial court level, there were decisions going both ways. As far as the standing issue, that has since been resolved by Mr. Frankel's Larson versus Allstate case, but that we didn't learn about that one until later. And in fact, in the Larson case, the trial court had ruled in the insurer's favor on very much the same standing argument. In other words, enforcement of an anti-assignment clause that we had at issue in this case. So I would submit that as a matter of law, American Family's defenses were indeed reasonable, and certainly American Family had the right to pursue an appeal of those defenses.
Could you then clear me of the notion that reasonableness really is a question of fact?
Typically, yes. And in the vast majority of first-party cases, I think that would be the case. But there have been appellate decisions when the reasonableness of a position has been acknowledged as a matter of law. I think the Scott Wetzel decision referenced in our briefing is one example of that. But there certainly have been instances where a party has adopted an insurer has adopted a legal position in its briefing, which courts have recognized as having been reasonable as a matter of law. If I'm remembering the Scott Wetzel case correctly, it had to do with whether an insurer, similar to this case, had valid grounds to have pursued an appeal. The decision was that it did. And because of that, therefore, it cannot be considered to have acted unreasonably in having pursued that appeal, because it's an adversarial proceeding. And as long as you have a valid basis for your position, you're entitled to advance that position. So if we accept that premise, the American Family did have valid grounds for pursuing its appeal, that brings us to what I consider at least to be the crux of this appeal, and that is, once the arbitration award was entered, what is the obligation of American Family to provide any security for eventual payment of that award if, in fact, there is any obligation to do so? To that point, there's no judgment. So can't submit a supersedious bond. I could find no rule of procedure that provides guidance as to what the insurer is supposed to do in that situation. where there's been an arbitration award that's been entered, but not reduced to judgment, but that there are defenses still viable, reserved for appeal, that if successful, would reverse the arbitration award.
Counsel, just for, can you help me?
Yes.
Time-wise, when was the award offered into the registry of the court? The
award itself was entered May 30 of 2012. Yeah. Rooftop Roofing then filed a motion to have judgment entered on that award. And our response to that was submitted July 12, I believe. So less than 60 days after submission of the award. And it was in our response that we first proposed the idea of tendering the amount of the award to the registry of the court. The reason we did that is because in the vacuum of any guidance from the rules or controlling case law as to how we do provide security, that just seemed to be the most sensical solution. And even though the trial court did not respond to that, we then, in the later summary judgment briefing, renewed that. And this was in September of 2012, and in two different briefs submitted on summary judgment, we renewed our request to have submitted the amount of the award into the registry of the court, which, as we all know, was eventually what Judge Crabtree decided would have been the appropriate procedure. So,
well, okay, let me back up and see if I understand, because I don't. Initially, American Family did not want to or did not participate in the appraisal process.
Right, if we go back in time,
that's right, I want to move back in time.
Yes,
so we'll start with that happening.
Correct.
Okay, you were then ordered to.
As within the fabric of the lawsuit, yes.
Correct.
We were ordered to.
Okay. Now, the appraisal comes out. Now, I'm going to, you eventually pay $10,000 or something like that. You eventually paid this money, right?
Correct.
So this is the statute where I'm focused on this reasonable term, reasonableness. An insurer's delay or denial was unreasonable if the insurer delayed or denied authorizing payment of a covered benefit without a reasonable basis for that action. Now, how does that fit in to, let's say, standing?
If we have a good faith, viable legal argument that Rooftop Roofing has no standing, then the court's order that we participate in arbitration, or I'm sorry, appraisal, is still subject to that defense. So once the court denied our motion to dismiss and ordered the appraisal process to proceed, American Family complied and did go through the process, and there was an award.
I understand.
But if our standing defense would eventually have proven successful upon appeal, that would have vitiated the arbitration award because we would have owed no money to Rooftop Roofing. We would have had no obligation to engage in appraisal with Rooftop.
So at this point, you're asserting that that is a reasonable basis.
Absolutely.
You've had a reasonable basis.
That is exactly what we are suggesting. That the anti-assignment clause in the policy coupled with the loss payable clause, when read on its face, would suggest that Rooftop Roofing did not have standing because the insured did not have the contractual right to have assigned its claim to Rooftop Roofing, a position that had been adopted by at least some trial courts.
So legally, whether you we begin moving back, you're asserting this position, whether you're right or wrong, what's the relevance, whether you're right or wrong? I mean, as a matter of law, if there's no way that is a viable defense standing, then it seems unreasonable as a matter of law. But if you could make the argument that we're not sure at the time we asserted it, that sounds factual.
Well, whether it's legal or factual, our position is that the trial court's grant of summary judgment to the plaintiff would be inappropriate under either instance. In other words, either we're entitled to summary judgment in our favor upon grounds that that defense is a viable defense as a matter of law, or alternatively, if you want to consider it to be a factual issue, then we're entitled to a trial and a finding of fact.
And then the fact finder would have to determine whether you are reasonable in asserting standing as a defense.
Now, as a practical matter, I see all sorts of...
Well, I'm not talking practical. I'm talking about under summary judgment. That's what I'm trying to sort out here.
Then yes. Our view is that either we were entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law, or alternatively, there's a fact issue that should have been addressed through a trial with a finding of fact. Probably, in my view, that would be an appropriate issue for Judge Crabtree still to decide rather than have a jury decide. But that's, more of a tangential question. And it is Judge Crabtree's decision to have granted summary judgment to the plaintiff, while sidestepping the issue of the reasonableness of that defense, is what we consider to have been error. Because again, Judge Crabtree never said our defenses were unreasonable, and he never said that we didn't have the right to appeal. When we look at his final order of March 6, I believe it was, the sole basis for his granting of summary judgment against American Family was his view that we had not procedurally proposed submitting the amount of the award to the registry of the court in a proper fashion. And if I'm reading his ruling correctly, what he's saying is we should have done that through a separate motion rather than raising a proposal in the context of our briefing on other motions. I guess simply put, to my mind, that is exalting form over substance. When Judge Crabtree is acknowledging that what he considers to be the appropriate remedy is actually the remedy that we had been the one to propose in the first instance. Obviously, American Family is not trying to delay for the sake of delay. They're not putting their head in their sand. We were trying to proactively come up with a solution that will allow us to preserve that appeal. That's why we said, Judge, why don't we pay the money to the registry of court? And we did it three different times. And to my mind, that at the very least, since Judge Crabtree ultimately got to the point of saying, yes, what should have happened is what American Family proposed in the first place, that at the very least creates a factual issue as to the reasonableness of American Family's conduct. If there are no other questions at this point, I'll save my remaining time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you. You have 1 minute and 26 seconds remaining.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of this court. Answering the first question first, it is a question of fact. And if we were to call this question of reasonableness a question of law, then we would allow an insurer to have an appraisal award, which is payable within 60 days following entry of the award under the policy, and have no evidence whatsoever of why they're paying the award or not paying the award, and simply just not pay it. And if American Family's position was accepted by this court, then American Family, based on whatever advice that counsel like Mr. Campbell could give, could simply just not pay. And that would, of course, gut the statute, 115 and 116 that say that you must pay, and if you unreasonably delay payment, that's quite a problem.
Well, Mr. Frankel, then how is summary judgment appropriate?
In this case, it was appropriate because of a lack of evidence. We have to start at the beginning. Under Sullivan and under our jury instructions, arguments of counsel are not evidence. And so the next question is, was there any evidence of reasonableness that the jury could have received? And the answer is no. Rather than waiving attorney-client privilege, American Family asserted attorney-client privilege. And rather than endorsing a single witness to testify on why it was reasonable for them to not pay, they just stood silent. They didn't have a single document.
Well, Mr. Frankel, let me interrupt for just one moment.
Sure.
So I understand when we're just talking about the legal defenses, because I'm hearing on one side we're talking about standing and timeliness, and on the other hand, I'm hearing advice of counsel as a legal defense, if I'm understanding you correctly, about attorney-client privilege?
Yes, and I think I should back up for a minute and just review the timeline. When we start the lawsuit, all the defenses are there, and we prevail on the motion to dismiss, and the judge orders appraisal. Appraisal occurs in May, the order, rather, and we get an award in early July, and then no payment. At that point, we ask the court to confirm the appraisal award as if it were arbitration, and say, would you make this an order of the court? And in response, American Family says it shouldn't be confirmed, and if it is confirmed, we want to deposit the money in the registry of the court. And it's important for the court to realize that this was alternative relief sought by American Family. And the court decided that this was not something that could be confirmed. And so then, in the fall, we moved for summary judgment on the basis of the appraisal award under two claims for relief. One was contract that was assigned, the policy. And the second was for unreasonable delay. And while that motion was pending.
And that's based on the statute.
And that's based on the statute alone. There's no bad faith. Bad faith requires unreasonableness and reckless disregard or intentional. The statute, reasonableness only. And so, we moved for summary judgment. And before judgment entered, American Family voluntarily paid the appraisal award to Rooftop and Mr. Scott. So that's when all of the legal defenses went out the window. But there's one other issue, which is summary judgment and balancing of evidence. We came in with evidence that there was an award, that the policy required payment of the award in 60 days, and of industry standards as set forth in the statute that the court has decided, which is that payment should be made within a reasonable time, and that's 10.3.11.04. And so in this case, we had shifted the burden over to American Family to show why it was reasonable to not pay. And at that point, they needed to do something more than just submit arguments of counsel, which we all agree is not evidence. And that's what didn't occur. What could they have done? Well, they could have easily asserted the defense of advice of counsel They could have gotten an expert witness to say, indeed, we have a reasonable basis here, and that way they might have presented this evidence at trial. But they chose not to do that. And here we are. One thing that American Family mentioned is that the Scott Runsell case stood for the proposition that reasonableness is a question of law. I think the way I read that case, which is Tozer versus Scott Wetzel Services, I read it as saying that that case involved an appeal expressly provided for, and I'm reading here, in the Workers' Compensation Act, not a civil action. The Court of Appeals addressed only the decision to commence the appeal, not the question of bad faith maintaining the proceeding. And that's how I read it. And in fact, this court read it the same way in a prior ruling in 2003 at 97 P3rd 161, 168. This is really a question of fact. So the heart of my argument is that if you're not going to pay an appraisal award, you have to have something. You have to have a judicial ruling saying that's okay, or you have to have some evidence that allows you to say this is reasonable. Otherwise, it seems unreasonable as a matter of law. It wouldn't be that tough to come up with evidence of reasonableness, but that's not what happened here.
Counsel, can you help me?
Yes, sir.
You filed a complaint.
Yes.
They filed a motion to dismiss alleging the assignment clause of the one-year statute and a third defense. After that was denied, what procedurally happened after the denial of the motion to dismiss? That is, I'm trying to ask, where would the defendant get a review of the issues on those three issues?
Okay, well, those are two questions. First, the factual question,
right.
What happened? Within the order denying the motion to dismiss, Judge Crabtree ordered appraisal based on the plain language of the policy and the briefs submitted, and then the admissions within the briefs. Where would the appeal lie? The appeal would lie right here in this court, and in fact was preserved all the way until that moment that American Family voluntarily paid this appraisal award. In other words, if they decided to hold fast and not pay, then they could have come before this court and said, well, we were right all along. But that's been waived, and American Family admits it. I will reserve the rest of my time.
All right.
Unless there are any questions.
Well,
all right. Well,
you need.
You okay? Also, you will need to continue your argument because we don't reserve on both sides. Just
okay.
So, I'll go back to the statute. A person engaged in the business of insurance, so this is the duty, shall not unreasonably delay or deny payment of a claim owed to or on behalf of any first party claimant. Okay.
That's 115. Yes. Sir.
Yes. So. Let's assume we don't have a lawyer involved. We have a claims adjuster, somebody in the insurance company, somebody working for American Family, takes a look at the policy and says, that can't be assigned. Right or wrong, they just said, no, we're not going to pay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not advice of counsel. That's a fact question. Is that reasonable or not? Is it not? I mean, I don't know what the facts are. This is a hypothetical, but
I'm reading the statutes and trying to figure out, well, if it's a fact question, the reasonableness of the delay, maybe that was the factual reason. He or she read the policy and just said, oh, no.
I certainly understand.
And then later, counsel, Mr. Campbell or somebody, and said, is this right? And then we get into litigation. But it's hard to tell from this record. We're at summary judgments.
Exactly. And in this case, the interpretation of a contract is always a question of law.
Uh-huh.
And whether your interpretation was reasonable,
that's right. That's
is a question of fact,
right,
that requires evidence. And it doesn't exist as a matter of law. Otherwise, this adjuster, he's not trained, and he looks at this policy and he decides it means something, and so he doesn't pay the claim, and then he gets a lawyer to agree with him, and they assert that in litigation. And if they're protected as a matter of law with nothing more, no evidence, then why have statutes prohibiting unreasonable delay?
Well, I think the statute would then envision a trial.
There would be a trial, but then we would have to have evidence. And that's where the balancing and the shifting of burden of proof of summary judgment comes into effect in my arguments here. And that is, there has to be evidence at trial that can be introduced. And as I pointed out, American Family did not have a single witness to talk about the reasonableness, and they didn't have any documents. So how could there be evidence in this case? Now, could it, if they went back in time, would they do it differently? Probably. Oh, the other thing was 10.3.11.04 requires prompt payment of claims when liability is reasonably clear, and that's accepted as industry standards based on Giampapa and other decisions of this court. So I hope I answered the question, sir.
Thanks.
Was there another question? Mm-hmm. Well, then I've run out of hot air. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Campbell, you have a little less than a minute and a half left.
Okay.
So I'd like to have you follow up on the answer given. What facts have you shown?
The witness,
in a summary judgment.
The witness who was to testify at trial, if we'd had the trial, was the claims representative responsible for the file. And the key piece of evidence was the policy itself, which contains the anti-assignment clause, which contains the one-year suit limitation. So those are the facts upon which the legal defenses derive. So there wouldn't have been evidence at the trial. What I do not understand is Rooftop Roofing's argument that somehow the burden of proof was shifted. I don't know how they believe that occurred. We didn't offer any expert testimony, true enough, but neither did plaintiff. They hadn't offered any expert to talk about the reasonableness of their conduct. So where was the evidence provided by Rooftop Roofing that somehow arguably shifted the burden of proof to American Family? All of this begs the issue of the reasons advanced by Judge Crabtree for granting summary judgment in the first place. He didn't do it for lack of evidence. He did it solely upon his perception that American Family had not adequately, from a procedural standpoint, preserve its arguments for appeal as to his denial of the legal defenses.
All right. Thank you. Your time is up. Thank you, counsel, both for your very helpful arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.